the real goal.
Okay. She's rolling.
Picture up here. This is a picture of the home of Jerry and Donna Correll, who live in Elk Creek, Virginia, which is in Southwest Virginia. I'm talking about a Pennsylvania fiddle woman fiddler, but I first heard this tune on the porch of this cabin, log cabin here in Virginia. Go ahead. And this is the annual picnic that the owners of the property have every year, in conjunction with a big old-time festival down there in Southwest Virginia. And this is the picnic where I first heard that tune played by Ellen Vigor, who's from Charlottesville, Virginia. Go ahead. And I then realized, after I heard that tune, that I had gotten this book, a friend of mine had gotten this book out of the Penn State Library, and Henry Koreski here is a reference librarian at the Penn State Library at the Harrisburg, was it Middletown, Pennsylvania?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
That's your overdue notice.
So we had gotten that. I didn't tell you we kept it, did I? No. That was the, this is the book plate, or the picture that's on the front of the book. And we had actually made a copy of it. So here I had this copy of this book. I loved this tune, and I thought, this is great. I wonder what the rest of the tune sounded like. So I went in there, and of course, the first tune I had to learn was one. Go ahead and hit the, yeah. This is the transcription of what we just played, which a lot of people call Sarah Armstrong's tune, but it actually, it was called The Old Reel. And we find in some of these books that this is what they call tunes when the player doesn't know the name, because he would say, what's the name of that? And they would say, oh, it's just an old reel, you know. But that's the name that's attributed to it. So the next tune I wanted to learn was one called The Snouts and Ears of America. Because you had to learn that, right?
Good lunchtime tune.
Good lunchtime tune. Not for a vegetarian, though. So let's try that one, The Snouts and Ears of America. Thank you. the Snouts and Ears of America. Then I went to an old-time music festival in Mount Airy, North Carolina. And there was a fellow down there by the name of Harry Bolick. Now, I don't know if any of you saw Harry when he was here. But at the time, I was getting interested in the Sarah Armstrong material. Harry was interested in Mississippi tunes, and he had done a lot of research on Mississippi tunes. And he was working on that project, but he was also interested in this. And he said, you know, I don't have time to do both of these, so why don't you see what you can do with this? And we were talking about doing a recording at the time. So Harry was a graphic artist, and we talked him into making t-shirts. And this is the t-shirt design that Harry made for the Sarah Armstrong. So they're getting tattered and worn now, and they're out of print. But for a while, everybody was wearing these around, so that helped to get the Sarah Armstrong's name out there. So let's play a couple more tunes here. Johnny Get Your Haircut. One's called Johnny Get Your Haircut, and the other one's called Maggots in the Sheep Hide. which I don't think anybody wants if you have sheep.
So you can use your own judgment as to whether these titles are better than worse than the old Rio.
The other thing Mark said last night was maybe the tunes weren't fit for public consumption, so then they just named them something else so they didn't have to put whatever they said. Okay, Johnny, get your hair cut. Maggots in the Sheep Pile. Thank you. go ahead. So I got real interested in Sarah Armstrong, and I wanted to try and find out more about her, because the book gave a little biographical sketch and a little history of how she came to play music. Her maiden name was Gray, and there was quite a few Grays in that area of the country, of the state of Pennsylvania. And she started playing the fiddle when she was 5 years old, because she had relatives, an uncle in particular, who was an accomplished fiddle player, and she learned from him, and the family played a lot together. They played for their own entertainment, they played for dances in the area, and so on. So she really had a long, long history of playing playing fiddle tunes. So I wrote out to the Derry, Pennsylvania area historical society, is where she was from, Derry, Pennsylvania, which is a little bit southeast of Pittsburgh, in Westmoreland County out there. I wrote out there and I said, can you tell me anything more about this Sarah Armstrong? And they said, well, if you send some money in, we'll do some research. So I sent them a couple bucks, and they wrote a letter back to me, and they said, well, we really can't find any more about her, but there's a woman that lives a little bit north here in town, Blairsville, that we think might be related to her. She thinks she might be related to her. So I said, well, that sounds good. So gave me her phone number, and I called her, and she said, yeah, I have some pictures, and yeah, I think we are related, and so on. And I'll show you some of the pictures she sent me, but she was related to her, and she's was an incredible resource. The Historical Society didn't really have anything. But they said she might be buried in Cole's Cemetery, but her stone's not there. And I thought, well, okay. So I was playing a contra dance in Pittsburgh, and took a drive, and I thought, well, maybe I'll stop in Derry at Cole's Cemetery and see if I can find it. So I went out there, and I was walking around the cemetery, and of course, you know, there's a lot of stones at a cemetery. I couldn't find anything, and there were some guys working there. It was Memorial Day weekend. And they were working there, trimming everything up, because everybody puts flowers on the graves on Memorial Day weekend. And the guys that were working there, they said, no, we don't know anything, but there's a guy down there in that building, he knows everything about this place. So I walked down there, and I said, well, you wouldn't have to know where Sarah Armstrong was buried. And he said, well, let me look. Pulled out a file drawer, and there was the burial record in the file drawer. I said, well, where's the stone? He said, well, it's probably not there. He said, if the family doesn't take care of them, we put them on a pile out in back of the shed here, and then if, you know, after a number of years go by, we have to get rid of them. I thought, okay. So he showed me where it was. Go ahead. And there I am, standing on the unmarked grave of Sarah Armstrong in Cole Cemetery. So for any of you who are doing research, you can't always depend on the internet or the historical societies or everything. Sometimes you got to get on your feet and go look for it yourself, and it was a stroke of real luck there, I think, and serendipity meant to be, I think. So I found that, and go ahead. This is her obituary, which the Historical Society dug up later after they took a renewed interest in Sarah Armstrong. But as I was doing this research, I felt like I was sort of going back and forth and not getting anywhere, and it reminded me of this Sarah Armstrong tune called Over the Stump and Back Again, which was written about a guy who had a tractor stuck on a stump and he couldn't get it off, so he kept going back and forth trying to get the tractor off, and I thought, well, that's a pretty good tune for the way I felt at that point. So let's try that one. Thank you. very much. We'll play one more now. It's sort of, a lot of these tunes were in the key of E for some reason. Must have been the key that they loved out there. This next one is in the key of A modal. For any of you who know what A modal is, it's. You want to explain what A modal is, Carl? You're the music expert.
Well,
in the
centered around A, but it's either major nor minor.
There you go. So when you hit the note, you gotta hit it right in the middle. It's hit your C or C sharp, it has to be somewhere in the middle.
For a lot of these old tunes, and it's very true.
Well, some of them, they really did that.
Yeah. Well, I know, that's what I'm doing. Sometimes not by intention, but just by way, you know.
Yeah.
For a lot of these old tunes, especially it's even true of Irish music, even more than American old time music, the melody was more traditional, going back farther than accompaniment. So they didn't really have to decide whether a tune was major or minor. So a lot of the rhythms and the chords that are chosen are kind of amorphous in a lot of these things traditionally. It's more of a modern thing that we've decided, oh, this is in a major key, this is in a minor key.
This one's called The Red Brick House in Georgiatown. Now, why they played a song about Georgiatown when they were in western Pennsylvania, I don't know. But these tunes migrate all over the place, and they come from a lot of different sources. And I'll tell you a little bit about how this book came to be written after we play this tune. Actually written this book, and his name was Samuel Byard, and he was a Penn State professor. He wrote this little book called Hill Country Tunes, which is the one Sarah Armstrong is documented in, and he wrote this big book here called Dance to the Fiddle and March to the Fife. And when did you say he started collecting tunes for this, Mark?
He was still in his 20s, I think, 1926.
1926.
Degree.
He started collecting tunes for this book, and it was published in 1982. There's over 600 tunes in that book. So anyway, I found out that there was going to be a lecture at the Penn State Library, and who do you think was giving the lecture up there? Just fell back there on the bass, Carl Wakonin, who is a music librarian at IUP, Indiana University of Pennsylvania. So we showed up there to hear this, And who else was there but this fellow here, Mark Tamsula, who is who's a fine fiddler who's been fiddling for a very long time, 30-some years in the old-time tradition, and he's from the Pittsburgh area. And Pittsburgh, Indiana, Pennsylvania are pretty close together out there. So Carl gave his talk on Samuel Byard, and he could talk for 2 hours about Samuel Byard. He really could. And I don't pretend to be an expert on Samuel Byard, but I know enough about him to tell you a little bit. And he wrote this book, The Hill Country Tunes. Go ahead. There's a picture of Sam and his first wife, Georgia. She's passed away. And she's playing the guitar. He was a fiddler as well. And here he is transcribing a tune from Sam. How do you say his last name?
Sam Losch.
Sam Losch, L-O-S-C-H, who's documented in that second book. So his method of collecting was... later, as the medium became more available, he recorded. But initially, particularly for this book, the first book, he would have the informant or the fiddler play a tune, and then he would whistle it back to them, and then he would make sure that he had it right, or he would sing it back to them, however he did it, and they'd say, yeah, that's it, and then he would transcribe it in the notation. And then he would do it again and say, now, do I have it? And they, you know, they'd say yes or no, and he'd tweak that until he had it. That's how he wrote this whole book. So I didn't have any recordings to learn these tunes. All I had was the music. So what I brought to that was what I know about playing the fiddle and made them up the way, that's all we can do.
I got my degree at Penn State Harrisburg, where I work, and I don't know if this is a big folklore or American Studies program here at all or not, but it's also sort of one of the things that you face these days as folklorists. Samuel Byard got it from primary sources, and we're learning things from secondary sources. So it's with all the old original fiddlers and stuff who are geographically and culturally removed from sort of the mainstream, it's really about our only way. So I guess the third generation is now you learn the tunes off of YouTube.
But it's for some of us that are a little bit older with gray showing in your hair, you can pretty much remember when the first really portable recording devices came into being. I'm not looking at you on purpose. Anyway.
He was just too polite to look at us.
I can remember, yeah. I can remember, but it's just amazing for the younger folks in the crowd. You don't know, you know? I mean, you got an iPhone, you point it at somebody, you got a video, you got a recording, right? I mean, it just was not that easy. A lot of these people that he collected fiddle tunes from didn't have electricity in their homes. And they were very rural, and he would take the mail wagon that went out there maybe once a week, maybe once every 2 weeks, depending on how much mail people got, and they'd drop him off because he didn't drive. He didn't drive a car. And they'd drop him off out there, and then the next time they came around, he'd pick him up, so he'd spend time with these people to collect the tunes. And that's how he did it.
Go ahead.
How many snow drifts did you have to walk through to learn these?
I didn't walk through any snow drifts to learn these. I really didn't. This is a picture of the Appalachian region where tunes, you know, the mountain regions where a lot of the fiddle tunes come from. And most of the time the focus is in Southwest Virginia and West Virginia and that circular area there. But as you see, West Virginia borders Pennsylvania and it borders Maryland there and Ohio. So a lot of people migrated from the south up to the north in the Pennsylvania, Pittsburgh region there. The reason for that was, especially in the dairy area where Sarah Armstrong is from, initially was an agricultural area, and then there was something called the Pennsylvania Canal, which I never knew anything about, but they decided they were going to make a canal to hook Pittsburgh and Philadelphia together. Now, how would you do that? I looked, there's hardly any water anywhere. But they did. This was their idea because there was a booming mining industry. There was timber, there was salt, and all kinds of different things out there that they needed to get to other places. So as Mark told me last night, there's something, what was it called? The
Portage Railroad.
Portage Railroad.
They reach, you know, follow the river canal up to the mountains, and then they would pull the barge up out of the water onto a railway and go up an incline, pulled by mules, I guess, over the mountains, back down again, and then lower it back down to the water on the other side and keep going.
So So all these kinds of things brought people to the area looking for a better way of life and to make some more money and so on. Of course, then the railroad came through, and that was the end of the canal. And the railroad brought, and the railroad and the mines and everything that came with all that brought, well, a lot of people there from a lot of different areas, a lot of nationalities from other countries and so on. So you had this big mixing pot of people, and this is where the music, we think, came from all these different influences, because they brought the musical instruments with them. Go ahead. So Sam Byard, these are the counties that he collected tunes in. If you see, a lot of them are in the mountainous regions there. Sarah Armstrong lived in Westmoreland County. And Mark was born in Blairsville, Pennsylvania, which is just, what, how many miles
north? 10 miles from Derry.
Ten miles north of Derry. And Carl was in Indiana, which is not very far from Derry either, right?
Yeah, that's right.
So it's an interesting group. Okay, so having said that about Sam, I'd like to get Mark to play a fiddle tune for us. And this one is out of this second book here. Mark bought this book, and he looked at it, and he thought, well, I might as well learn the very first tune in the book. So, you want to tell them more about that, Mark?
This tune, it's called Neil Gow's Rant. And kind of curiously, Neil Gow is well known as a Scottish fiddler, and there are very large collections of tunes that represent all the music that he played. I think it's they know very well what he did and didn't do, the official Neil Gow repertoire. But this tune, which happens to have his name in it, Neil Gow's Rant, doesn't belong in the official Neil Gow repertoire. So for whatever reason, they named it for him, but somehow it's not really connected with him. But it's a great tune. I think Bayard must have put it as number one in the book for a reason, and I love it.
Who's the fiddle player that played?
I was going to say John Meehan.
Let's see here.
He's a Greene County fiddler, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, is it M-E-I-G-H-E-N, huh?
Yeah, John Meehan.
Yeah.
So, something like this, Neil Gow's Rant. Thank you.
Mark, do you want to just tell me a little bit about what you've been doing with the recordings?
As Tom took the plunge, he got interested in what Sarah Armstrong had done, and she was the focus of that first book. She maybe a third of the tunes in there were from her. So he recorded a CD, and I with a friend of mine back in Pittsburgh, we were sort of concurrently interested in the same idea, but we were working more from the larger book, and so we after a certain period of time got ready to do our own recording. And I'd have to say, there's a certain challenge to this. I don't have music training per se, so by the time I was taking an interest in this, I really didn't sight read. So that became my impetus to be able to actually look in the book and struggle with some of these things, figure them out.
You can see it hasn't hurt you.
But reading something off a page, and there's so many ways that a tune can sound. You have to, put, from our own experience, we were sort of putting into this music and interpreting it. And it finally began to, define itself. I think after a few tunes like that, that it seemed like, these work well if you put energy into them. So we embarked on our own project, and now I've got two CDs with my friend. And we're covering many more different fiddlers. We're not just focusing on any one guy, but sampling a lot of the fiddlers out of this book. Bayard visited over 100 fiddlers in the course of that 35 years that he worked on this stuff. Interesting. There was a location down here south of... He was down in these counties a lot, Fayette County of Dunbar's region down there near Connellsville. And there were quite a few music families located there that he also dedicated stuff in the first book, Hill Country Tunes, featured Dunbar fiddlers. And are we going to do Cuckoo's Nest? So this tune comes from Emery Martin, and it's a version of the Cuckoo's Nest. Now, anybody who plays old-time music today, they might be familiar with the version, kind of a New England tune, Cuckoo's Nest. So you can hear similarity with this one, but yet there's a difference. So it sounds a little more southern to my ears.
Sabbatical and went up to Penn State Library and digitized all of Sam Byard's recordings that were in the library up there and put them on a more permanent medium because they were on reel-to-reel tape and cassette tape, and they were disintegrating rapidly. So he preserved that for all time. A wonderful thing he did there, and like I said, he could speak for hours and hours and hours about all this, but I won't let him.
Carl, no way we stay friends.
And Mark Tipsula from Pittsburgh. This fellow back here on the guitar is Henry Koretsky. Henry and I have been playing together for 12 or 13 years now, and we started out in a contra dance setting, and Henry's
played up here in Syracuse a few times.
Played up here in Syracuse, and a lot of the dances up here in New York. We've been all over the place with dances, all the way out to Seattle, Washington, and Oregon, and all over the place. Hundreds of dances. And Henry put the guitar on the CD I made, which I forgot to bring in out of my car, but I can go get it if anybody's interested. Put the guitar on that, and we made another CD together. And Henry is just a wonderful, wonderful musician. He plays mandolin and guitar, and this big mando cello here, and whatever else he picks up, he can make some music out of.
Always
He plays klezmer and jazz and swing and folk and bluegrass and Celtic and you name it. So he brings a lot. He brings a lot on the guitar, and don't give him a sheet with the chords on it because just for spite, he won't play one chord that's on the sheet. But it still sounds wonderful. Back here's my partner in everything, Barb Schmidt, and as I was getting this project together, she was coming to all the jams, and we were learning all these tunes together. She's been very supportive. She knows how to operate a computer and how to put this PowerPoint presentation together, which is a good thing. So I'm going to move on here. I'd like to show you the pictures that I got from this Ruthie Hennigan of Sarah Armstrong. She had in her collection, because she was related, and they had in their old album some pictures of her in her later years. These are her children, who in the book, it says they accompanied her time to time. Go ahead. There she is holding her dog. Go ahead. And then she said to me, well, I have this picture. I don't know if you'd want it or not. But as it turns out, this fellow right here was Ruthie Hennigan's grandfather. This would have been a great-grandfather. And this is Sarah Armstrong's uncle. So that's the closest we could get to anything with a picture of musical instruments in the Gray family. They called them the Fiddlin' Grays. Sarah Armstrong's uncle, Davis Gray. Go ahead. And she says in her letter, as a child, I barely can remember hearing Sadie, Sarah Armstrong's nickname, and my grandpa's family play when they got together. My sister, who's a good bit older than I, can remember quite well. She said there was always a ton of food, and they would play for hours, just for the fun and entertainment of it. Now, anybody that's been to an old-time jam or knows can relate to that. Always good times, no matter how bad things were. That's what music can do for you. Go ahead. There's another picture of the Grays. There was a huge family out there. They were of Scottish descent. One more. And there's Davis Gray again and his wife. This was Sarah Armstrong's brother, who was deaf and stepped out in front of a train by mistake and got killed. 1936. Go ahead. This is Kiss Grove, which was where they played a lot of music back in that day. They had dances out there and this kind of thing. So over the last 10 years, I've collected all these pictures. Carl was a big resource, and the Historical Society took a renewed interest in Sarah Armstrong. What I'd like to play now is a waltz that she wrote, because she composed a couple of tunes. We're going to do this one, and we're going to do one more. This one's called Waltzing with the One I Love. Thank you. she wrote. Now we're going to do two more in a medley here. One's called The Little Hornpipe, and the other one is called Patty on the Turnpike. And Patty on the Turnpike, there's a lot of different versions of that tune, too, but this we call Patty on the Pennsylvania Turnpike because it was written out in that area, and Pennsylvania Turnpike goes right by there.
So if you guys come up with your own variant, you can call it Patty on the New Jersey, New York Thruway.
So finally, after all this, I released this CD, and that was the cover of the CD. It's got 26 of her tunes on there, and I can go out and get some if anybody's interested in getting one after we're done here. So we're going to do one called Little Hornpipe, and then we're going to go ahead and pat it on the turnpike two times each.
Spit valves on the stage. So, but it was an amazing piece of music that they did. Bringing the music up into the 21st century, I guess, is one way of looking at it.
Hit that next one. Now, for me, most of the time, for the whole project, this was all about the music for me. I never thought I was doing anything in a historical way or anything like that. But they thought out there at the Derry Historical Society that I did something. So they awarded me this John Pomeroy Award for rediscovering the music of Sarah Gray Armstrong and preserving it through my recording CD and so on there. So I got to think about it. And I said, well, I guess I did. hit that next one there. And you just never know what you're going to find out when you get into this kind of thing, because I have this copy of the Hill Country Tunes book. I bought it about 10 years ago. And this is the book plate that's in the inside of the book, and it says God of Wisdom, Library of Theos Bernard. I had this book for 10 years, and I never knew who Theos Bernard was. Does anybody know who Theos Bernard is? Never heard of him. No? You were in good company. Nobody has. But if you Google that name, he was one of the first Americans to get into the inner sanctums of Tibet on a spiritual journey. And he went over there in the 40s and did this, you know, sort of a predecessor to all the guys who went over there to India in the 60s, you know, looking for their guru. But it was just very interesting.
He could have stayed home and learned how to play the fiddle.
Why he had this book, I have no idea. But just an aside. So go ahead, one more. We're going to finish up with a song called The Dream Song, another one that Sarah Armstrong composed. And this song was written, she dreamed the melody to it. And when she awoke, she wrote the notes down.
No, I don't think we've ever played this tune with her actually watching it.
Did she dream her uncle playing the tune?
That's right. She dreamed that her uncle was playing
it. Here's a sweet tune for you. She remembered it. She played it and played it. But if it weren't for Sam Byard to transcribe it, this beautiful melody that you lost.
We screw up the screen when it comes down.
Yeah.
Here we go.
That I used to put all this together, the Hill Country Dudes book, the Dance with the Fiddle book, Town Gown Magazine, which is something that was published in State College, the Derry Area Historical Society, Cole Cemetery, Ruthie Hennigan, and last but not least, Carl Raconin, who contributed immensely to this project. And go ahead, hit that next one. You can get a copy of this tune. If anybody wants the address, there it is. You can download it on the internet, the Hill Country Tunes. We want to thank you very much for being here and listening to our presentation.
Thank you.